objective of that is to provide the, you know, the best water resource information for not only the state, but for you folks as you make water management decisions here on the local level. So with that, I'll turn it over to Tom. He's taking on this project, and we'll be you'll see his face down here quite a bit. And also, we've got an office in Cedar City where they run stream gauges out. Some of those guys will be out measuring water levels and probably knocking on some of your doors to ask permission to do that as well. So.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Ken. So as Dave introduced, this study is an investigation and actually an update of the groundwater resources that are here in Fairlawn Valley. And like I said, it's in cooperation with Division of Water Rights. Just a brief background, which you people are probably all very acquainted with. Fairlawn Valley, approximately 160 square miles, is a structural depression between the Hurricane Fault and the Red Hills to the west. So there's quite a bit of alluvial fill in between those two structural features. It's a closed surface water basin, aside from the wind gap in the south. So all of your tributaries drain into the valley and stay there. And in the past, Little Salt Lake acted as a playa, and that hasn't happened, well, in the recent past, at least from what I can gather. And it used to drain out through the Parowan Gap until structural movement. You probably all know that. The valley historically had quite an extensive flowing artesian condition, especially out by the playa. From visits that I've made in November, not much of that's left. I didn't find too many flowing wells, actually not at all. And your unconsolidated fill deposits here are 1,000 plus feet thick. So quite a decent sized aquifer. The past studies that have been done in this valley, the first study was done by Thomas and Taylor in 1946, which was the original assessment of the geology here and the groundwater resources. Development was pretty limited in the valley at that point, approximately 6,000 acre feet of annual groundwater withdrawal. So not too much. And we do have water levels back to that time, and they're pretty flat, relatively stable. Not too much going on. The second study, which was done in 1978 by Bjorklund and others, another revisit to the valley, and also to Cedar City, the Cedar Valley to the south, updated that study. And a lot had changed between the 40s and the late 70s. A large rise in pumping occurred in the mid-60s. So the annual groundwater withdrawal went up to the mid-30,000 acre feet. And those water, you can see those water level declines in many hydrographs across the valley. I'll show you those. Like Dave said, Fairlawn Valley has been part of a lot of valleys throughout the state that have been monitored. Their water levels have been monitored for quite an extensive period of time. All of these valleys that are in gray have a significant amount of development, 20,000 plus feet of acre feet of withdrawal. Fairlawn Valley is here. These are the wells that are historically monitored that we have long-term records for. And so the USGS staff from Cedar City has been present in the valley for quite a long time. You've probably seen them here and there visiting wells. a couple of the water levels, we'll look through the valley. This well here in the north, where there's been a less historical development. There actually has been quite a bit of recent agricultural development in the north. We see the record starts in 1970. Here at about 5 feet under land surface. You see this decline of about 30 feet to the present, but a definite downward trend since the 70s. You move to the middle of the valley. Out here was the central part of the valley. We have a record back a little bit further. You see these nice spikes from these large precipitation events in the mid-70s, the 1983 event. You do see those in the hydrograph. But again, 60 to 70 foot drawdown for the last 60 years. And then further south in the valley, you see those same peaks? And these drawdowns are approaching 80 to 90 feet. So, along with the water level monitoring that we've done in the past, we also have been doing pumping monitoring in the valley. And that's a process by which our techs go out and strap on a meter to the pumping well, compare that to the actual power consumption, and then they get a power rating from that, and then we apply an estimate to the valley given the power records. And so that record's been going on for quite a while. Here in the early portion or the mid part of the 20th century, these were actual studies where these estimates come from. These estimates here are from power ratings. And we see, like I was saying, a large increase in pumping, and then it's held relatively steady around the mid 30,000s of acre feet withdrawal. So that's a little bit of the background of what the survey has been doing in the valley for the last 50, 60 years. Now to the objectives of this study. First objective of the study is to develop an updated groundwater budget for the Valley Fill Aquifer. So how much water actually comes into the aquifer, either from infiltration from the creeks and mountain block recharge that actually comes through the mountain block. We'll also do an evaluation of the current groundwater levels and the storage conditions and the changes from the last study, which was those actual water levels measured in 1975. So we'll produce a change map from then. And then also an evaluation of the effects of that drawdown of all the water levels, what types of effects that's going to have in various places in the valley. So, the water budget. These are the basic components of the water budget that we'll evaluate. First, the recharge components. Obviously, the predominant, only source of recharge is ultimately sourced from the precipitation that falls on the plateau from the mountains to the east. So some of that recharge infiltrates into the mountain block, but a large percent of it ends up either evaporating, sublimating away, whatnot. And then anything that's excess that doesn't go into the ground comes off as your spring runoff. And that's what you catch coming down the canyons. The other part of that recharge that occurs from the runoff happens out here on these alluvial fans. Base flow and peak flows come off in the spring, run across these fans, and they recharge the aquifer directly as they flow over them. That's more limited when they're being diverted. Not at all if they're being completely diverted. And then a very small portion is recharged from excess irrigation water that's been put on by pivots or reforms. And then, obviously, the rain and snow that falls in the valley, but that's pretty negligible in terms of the total budget. The change in storage is the amount that's withdrawn from the aquifer. And we can get a pretty good grasp on that just because of the extensive water level record that we have. We know how much we've pulled out. It'll take a fair bit of modeling to do that because we need to actually know what the volume is in the aquifer. This has to deal with porosity, the storage properties of the aquifer. And then we move over to the discharge side of things. Historical springs that were in the valley, many of which flew had much more discharge than they do now. The springs that discharge in the mountains. And then the big one, well, one of the big ones is evapotranspiration. All the evaporation and transpiration that comes from the vegetation in the mountains, as well as anything that comes off the agriculture. And we have ways to analyze that. One of the bigger ones that we're really going to focus on is the captured runoff. I've been down here a couple times now, and most of the irrigation companies here are pretty efficient about capturing the streams during the growing growing season, water that would have recharged the aquifer if it had not been captured. And then the biggest one, the withdrawals, the actual well withdrawals in the valley. So, recharge. First thing we'll do for the mountains is we'll make an estimate of infiltration and runoff using a basin characteristics model, which incorporates a lot of different components of the system in the mountains, soils, precipitation. Puts that all into a model. But most of the valley recharge likely occurs as seepage on alluvial fans and through the subsurface mountain block. We'll also be doing stream seepage analysis for the alluvial fans, especially during the non-growing season, when the water is actually run out over the fans and into, I think most all of the tributaries are run into gravel pits, maybe not all of them, but we'll evaluate how much actually goes back into the aquifer. So additional discharge measurements will be made before each of those diversions that are at the mouths of the canyons. And that's one thing that I hope to glean out of this meeting tonight with water managers and other responsible parties, is the assistance in understanding the timing and the placement of the irrigation distributions that are used in the growing season for the surface water. So that's why I've produced a couple slides that show the four main tributaries for the valley. We've established a site here in Little Creek, right above the Little Creek diversion and distribution structure. I went up here with Tony and take a look at that. One of the key elements here is that most of these, if not all of them, have weirs installed in them, and it'll be helpful to gathering accurate data if we can get staff plate measurements off those so we know how much is going into the pressurized systems. So there's a weir here. And after talking to Tony, a lot of this water is run out onto the fan during the winter months, and a good portion of it is likely recharged in the aquifer in the winter. Red Creek. This is the one that we're going to need a little bit more help because it's so heavily managed. Has a power plant on it and a penstock system. After talking to Frank Lister, both the spring up in this tributary and up here both flow into a penstock. And there's not a really good way to measure it down here other than the weir that goes into the pressurized system. But there's no staff plate on that weir, so it would be really helpful to put one in and gather that data. Barrowan Creek. I went out with Kelly Stones. This one will be really nice. There's actually a nice record on this creek, at least during the growing season that we have. That's required by the irrigators. And that happens here. There's a weir down here outside the power plant that's recorded in order to make sure that the pressurized system is getting the allotted amount of water. So these records are all going to be very imperative into making that calculation of how much water comes out of the mountains as runoff and where it ends up. That'd be really important. And then Summer Creek, I went out with William Wilson. It's a smaller drainage, but yet this one also has a staff plate in it, records being important. Okay, so changes in storage. So rates of storage change will be made by calculated changes in water levels over the period of record and estimated aquifer storage properties. So that's a misnomer right there. This will be done with an actual flow model down here, a model flow model to estimate the storage properties. We also will, we have produced, and I'll show you, potentially metric map or a water level map for November of 2012 and November of 2013. We'll make that comparison of 1 year comparison of change in the water levels. And we'll also produce the change maps from this water year, this current water year, and from 1974 to 2013. We'll take a look at, these are the water levels. Now pay close attention to this. These water levels have a 10-foot interval. They were produced in 1974. So each one of these lines is 10 feet. One of the things that I want to point out in the 1974 potentiometric map, you see along Fremont Wash up here, all these contours V towards the wash. So that means that the groundwater is seeping out of the land. And that is in agreement with historical reports. But there was a lot of historical springs up in here, and the groundwater levels verified that. Additionally, back in 74, you have some groundwater mounding down here, just outside of Parowan. You do see a bit of a V back here, probably produced by pumping. If you move to conditions that were collected in 2012, you see that a lot of this, the contour interval is 20 feet here. A lot of this is flattened out here. It's not so heavily V'd, especially up here in the north. The other key feature in this is you see this large depression right here, where the changes in water levels in here are in excess of 80 feet. So that's how the groundwater system has changed in the last 40 years. So how are we going to evaluate discharge? Well, one of the things we're going to focus on is the withdrawals from the wells. Most of the wells in the valley are irrigation wells. And from 1965 through 2008, the Cedar City office and other offices in the state would go out and rate these wells on a triennial basis. And those estimates were published in the yearly report. So as part of this study, we will go out and make new consumption estimates based on those wells that are in the database. So each one of those wells will be visited. Same procedure will happen. Strap-on flow meter will be attached to the well, and we'll assign a rating to the well. We'll also be looking at evapotranspiration. Typically, natural evapotranspiration in the valley is only really possible when the groundwater or the water levels are within about 20 feet of the surface. And so we'll kind of go and use our water level map and try and decide where that area is actually possible and look at the vegetation, the natural vegetation in that area, and see if that's actually happening. And then also the irrigation evapotranspiration. How much is actually put on the pivots, how much goes up in the air and leaves. Also, we'll do a limited water quality assessment for the valley. All the irrigation wells that are visited will have pH, specific conductance, and temperature recorded. Selected 25 of those wells, we'll do major ion chemistry. So we'll be looking at the dissolved constituents in the water, potassium, chloride, sulfate, nutrients, and stable isotopes, just so we can kind of get a grasp on the age distribution in the aquifer.
Have those studies been done before, so we've got numbers to compare with?
The chemistry?
Chemistry, yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah, the chemistry, a pretty extensive chemistry workup was done in 78. So we will have some historical numbers to compare to. One of the things that's interesting that I read in the historical report is there's two systems chemically in the valley. The southern portion of the system seems to be a bit different chemically than the northern. There's a little bit of a thermal signature up here associated with volcanics. So that'll be interesting, and we'll be able to look at that. So this is not all of the wells in the valley. These are the wells that were visited to produce the potentiometric map. It's about 75 wells. That's about 75% of the wells in the valley. And these will all be visited. These wells over here are the wells that have been selected to have meters installed by Division of Water Rights. And that's going to happen here soon, right?
Monday.
Monday. So you'll be seeing Division of Water Rights people soon.
Could you explain, please, what you mean by rated?
Rated well? Rated well means that we have a rating in the fact that you have a withdrawal associated with a power consumption. So we know how many gallons per minute or cubic feet per second come out per kilowatt hour, and that's a rating. I get that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, it's those wells that have been part of the groundwater withdrawal network in the past where we've done that we've used to make the estimates of overall withdrawals from the valley. So they basically go out, make the ultrasonic meter measurement, and then come up with a coefficient that relates that particular volume of water to a power consumption. And then with the power consumption, then you can estimate the total withdrawal.
Yeah. Okay. You can see these metered wells will be well distributed about the valley to the north, down through the heavier stressed areas in the valley. This is an interesting photo. Well, it's a Landsat image. This is false color, showing the near infrared spectrum. So when near infrared light hits plants, it reflects back red. So really healthy plants are going to show really red. So in 1974, I believe this is before pressurized system. This is probably during flood irrigation in the valley. More square plots. You see that Little Salt Lake is active at this point. There's water out here. And it's a relatively decent year in the mountains. You see reds up in here. You move to 2004, you can see the change in the method of agriculture, and but it's much more efficient, that's for sure. A lot brighter red. But you see the different methods. So these are principally pivot agriculture. That's the more modern way of doing ag. So in summary, the things that we're really, really after is an update of those. We want to use those long-term groundwater declines since the 1960s to kind of calibrate how the aquifer is doing. We want an updated groundwater budget. Technology's come a long way, and I think that we can make better estimates on those components of the groundwater budget. Like I said, we'll do a recharacterization of the aquifer chemistry. And, we'll also make an evaluation of effects of decreased water levels. How much area of ET we've lost naturally, how many springs have stopped discharging, how many flowing wells don't discharge anymore. And the take-home message from this, I think, and before we really getting into the study, is that accurate measurements are imperative to the quality of data. That's what the U.S. Geological Survey kind of hangs their hat on, is that if we can make good measurements, we can be more confident in our findings, and then water managers and the people who use the water can be more confident in the decisions that are made. So gathering good data is really important. These are the acknowledgments of the people that I've already worked with down here in Paramount Valley. And here's my information. That's it. Questions? Or do you want to?
Yeah, no. Do you have any questions for Tom here?
Are those rated wells calibrated on an annual basis or semi-annual, or have they been calibrated since the 70s?
They were calibrated on a triennial basis. So they would take, they would divide the, at least for Parawan, from what I understand, they divide it into thirds, visit each well on a third year basis. But it hasn't been done since 2008. The funding was lost on that program in 2009. Any other questions?
They haven't been recalibrated since 2008, but they continue to do that.
They continue to make the estimate, yeah. They haven't been visited.
Because obviously as the groundwater drops, the pump curve
changes. Yeah.
So within the framework of your analysis of the groundwater budget, are you going to look at factors affecting the groundwater within Parowan Valley that may be outside the limits of Parowan Valley?
Yeah, like capture from other valleys?
Water is tributary to other valleys, or wells outside of the area that could be influencing it?
One of the big portions of this study is, and I didn't show it in the, well, maybe I did. Yeah, I did. We also are collecting water levels right here in the northern portion of Cedar Valley to understand if or what the connection is between the two valleys. In past models, the flux between the two valleys has ranged from 3,000 acre feet to 1,500. We just don't have a lot of data in between the two to really peg that. So we're going to, the difference in 2012 from the two valleys, now it's about 200 feet. So the gradient, the groundwater gradient between here would be quite steep. But yeah, there is that effort to do an analysis on the effects in adjacent.
But on this particular frame that you have shown here, the specific area that you're showing would be represented by the blue, running down to the, whatever you want to call it, magenta.
There.
Contours, right?
Down here.
Right. Where's Parowan Valley, I think you're asking?
What geographic limits is the valley entailing? I mean, is the study entailing?
Well, the budget itself will be made for the actual watershed, which is Parowan Valley, which would not include this. That would be the what we'll make the budget calculation for. The analysis of what goes on here is a side type of analysis. Does that answer your question?
Would that be a potential discharge from the Parowan Valley budget, though?
Yeah.
Into the Cedar Valley?
Mm-hmm. And that'll be evaluated by flow model. Any other questions?
So it's showing about a 200 foot elevation difference between the groundwater levels
mm-hmm.
and the valleys right now.
Earlier in your presentation, you indicated that some of the alluvial fill was up to 1,000 feet in depth. Do you have any idea how much of that saturated?
We don't have, well, from what I've looked at so far, we don't have a lot of deep, really deep borehole to do, you know, evaluate that. I would assume, given the compaction, there's a lot, I've read in the historical reports that there's quite a bit of interbedded clays in the valley. Their extent and how prolific they are at depth, in terms of storage availability, not a lot of work's been done there. When you do these things, if you've got a lot of fines, you know, your storage says, you know, I have this amount of volume, but actually how much is it, you know, how much of it is extractable? When you get into the fines, they don't give it up. So,
Do you get to have any figures or do any monitoring on, like, cottonwood and and Willow Creek and mineral loans.
The ephemeral streams?
Yeah, cottonwood flows all year round, but the others just flow in the spring.
The model that I referred to at the beginning of the presentation, BCM, will take and make an estimate for the amount that would be runoff to the tributaries there. We don't have any historical gauges in those tributaries. The only historical gauges that we have not long term, but we do have pretty extensive gauge data is the four that I listed. Now, there could be an effort to go and measure point discharge on those washes during peak flow to make an estimate.
So, cottonwood flows pretty well year round.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes down to the
pond, and yeah, Jim, I don't know anybody, if you're familiar with Jim House, he told me that he works in the valley. No, we will do that.
Tom, you mentioned something about the help that you're going to need to pull all this data together. Are there additional measuring devices or things that we need to have put in to help get you better numbers, or?
Well, no, I think we have, in terms of the surface water, we have the equipment or the structures there to make the measurements. It's just a matter of recording them. The weirs are there. There's only one. Red Creek doesn't have the staff plate installed. But it will take an effort to record them. I know that the guys that manage the irrigation, I mean, they have a certain amount of shares that they have to make sure are filled. And we can kind of make a rough estimate of the total volume from that. But it'd be nice if we could have the actual tables that are associated with those weirs and the stage that comes across them. It's more accurate. Yeah.
So do we need to put those staff plates in then and get them set up? And
well, the guys that I talked to, Frank, Tony, and Kelly, all seemed agreeable that they can record those.
They can do that, okay.
Yeah.
So you've got people lined up to take
yep.
this work, okay.
Yep.
So I think the most important thing is to get as most accurate data as we can from everything so that you can
yeah.
get your model working.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Your graph showed the drop, historical drop. What's the estimated depth of the aquifer? Have you guys done any type of
depth of the water
mm-hmm.
from the land surface?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Depth of overall water.
Oh, the saturated thickness is what you're after.
Yes.
That hasn't been analyzed. I mean, it would vary. I mean, obviously, this system is a basin and range system, so the alluvial fill is probably thicker on the west side. So that would vary depending on where you're at. But there's probably wells on the east side that are in bedrock. So we could, that's an estimate of transmissivity, thickness of the aquifer. But those numbers will be output in the model.
So what's the ultimate objective? I mean, we get all the studies and the data and everything, and we see that we're using more water than what's being recharged. What are you guys planning on doing?
Me?
Anybody.
Me? Nothing. I'm here to gather good data.
if we get that data and it shows that we're actually pulling more water out than we've got coming in, I'm going to come back to you and say, okay, what do we do? What's the plan? Where do we need to be? Okay, and what do we need to do? Because if we continue to pull more water out of here than we've got water coming in, what's going to happen? We saw the curves on the
yeah.
drawn in. It's just going to continue. At some point, it causes significant problems. The statute tells the state engineer to regulate groundwater basins based on safe yield.
So you pick this year, this water year, because of our annual snowpack percentage is about close to 100% for a lot of the drainage here. Is that why you picked this year?
No, we picked this year because we finally got to the...
No, that's good, actually. That's lucky.
That makes a lot of difference.
It does make a lot of difference. Because if it was a low year, then we would have to make that uncertainty assessment. I mean,
yeah.
obviously, as years go by, you're going to have wets, and you're going to have dries. I mean, you're going to make your estimate based on average. And if we were doing this on a dry year or a wet year, then we'd have to make that adjustment.
See, and I see a process going through there. We'll sit down and we'll analyze the data. We mean you and us. We'll sit down and we'll talk about this data that we've got, and we're going to have to come up with some kind of a plan about where we are, what it all means, and how then we're going to work together as a water community to keep the resource viable and to keep the industry going and just to protect everybody's existing rights, and how are we best going to work together to make that happen?
So, and I guess, so we've come up with an ideal water table level that would be ideal if we try to reach that goal?
Could be. It could be one of the goals. We've worked with the people over in the Rural Enterprise, and we're working with them there. We're not saying we're trying to get the water level to a certain level. We're just trying to get it to stop dropping, to try to get it to level out. So we can hold. If they want to come back and do a plan to get it back up higher so they don't have to pump from such great depths, they can do that. But that's not even the part of the plan there. We're just trying to get this stopped.
There's another equation I need to ask somebody that knows about it. Bob Evans was telling me one time back in the 70s, and it was probably that time when they did the study in 74, where they dug a big trench and kept filling it with water, with some kind of radioactive trace dye, and they traced to see where that dye went, and they couldn't find any evidence of where it was going other than they found some in Burl area. Is there any record of that study that was done? That maybe our hot water is going somewhere where we don't know it's going.
Those darn Burl people.
Yeah, maybe it was just one of those stories, but I don't know.
No, you're right. There is, that study was done, but the results, I couldn't find anywhere where it really had anything
where
conclusive.
They found it.
Interesting, though. It would be fun to find that out, and we'll go get the water back.
That's true.
We know not to dump in that hole anymore.
So what is
we're
going to
plug that hole somehow, right?
Our table?
Is this?
So most of the field work will occur this summer. A lot of the modeling and the analysis will occur next year up in Salt Lake. And then the report will be published in 2015.
2015?
And when that report is published, we will come back again, and we're going to sit down in a public meeting. We're going to talk about that. We'll let Tom tell you all about it, right?
We'll give you the results.
We're currently just starting some small recharge projects.
Uh-huh, yeah, I heard about those.
I don't know how that will affect things, but you guys are aware of that also.
Mm-hmm.
But the better measurements even on those that we can... I'm thinking that we can get, you know, if we can keep that monitored about what we're putting in. And
yeah, I mean, if we know how much is going to those, then we do have ways of essentially making a calculation of how much actually goes in the water, or how much goes in the aquifer, how much goes up to EVAP.
Yeah.
So is it best that we just, I mean, at this point, hopefully first stage of that happens next fall, a 6-inch line running into our abandoned sewer ponds, and so
right,
we just stay in touch and adjust measurements as we have to at that point.
Those, I went out with Kelly. I'm assuming that you're going to run those out along the channel that
we're actually going.
Or are you going to put them in a pipe?
In pipes until they get to those ponds, and then they'll flow into the ponds and hopefully do what they were fired for, is leaking into the engine.
We already know they leak. That's why we're not in the ponds.
So the good research
knowing where those pipes are coming out, where you're taking the water from, we can make that calculation.
Okay.
I mean, the nice thing about this is, because this is going to come off Parowan Creek, there's a nice weir up at the top of the penstock that we can get essentially an all-inclusive, know exactly what's either going down to the power plant, going to the parallel and secondary.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And the better data we help get to Tom, the better model we're going to have, the better tool we'll have to help make decisions.
So if it snows in Brian Head,
uh-huh,
and it usually does,
yeah, good
and it melts, how long does it take to get from there to here? I mean, I've heard arguments from 4 years to 20 years, but you must know about this stuff.
How's on the flow path, they're probably both right.
Ellen, I can tell you that the sewer takes 4 hours.
Are you talking groundwater or surface water?
I'm talking if it snows up there and you get surface water and it just, you know, goes down into the ground, how long does it take to get in the aquifer down here?
So you want to know how long it takes to get right up here down to this threshold between the mountain block.
The underground aquifer.
I can pump it out, or down to where I can pump it out of my well.
It varies. It depends on how. I mean, obviously, in a groundwater flow system, you have multiple flow paths. You're going to have one that goes deep, that recharges, you know, 900 feet down. Probably, you know, thousands of years on that one. You're going to have shallow ones that maybe are on the order of 10 to 50 years. That's
kind of a way to
It's a distributed flow.
Yeah, one of the ways to think about that a little bit is that, you know, if you're thinking that, you know, the travel time of a particle of water, so you drop a drop of water on the top, the time that that actual water, you know, moves all the way down through that rock to where you're going to pump it out, is probably on the order of thousands of years. But that's occurring every year, so it's just kind of pushing. You've kind of got a pressurized system. So you add a little bit more to the top, a little bit more moves out the bottom. And so it's continuing all the time. So that actual individual, if you're actually tracing an individual particle of water, it may take thousands of years to make that whole trip all the way down.
But you can also see on the graphs, like in 82 and 83, where the underground water table kicked up during the previous wet winter.
And that's what Dave just referred to. That's called a pressure response. An increased pressure at high altitude will cause that response.
Well, that's because the ground's saturated already with water.
So. Right, and you have an additional recharge source that's local.
Yeah. And yeah, in that case, in 82, 83, not only did you have a considerable more recharge by coming to the mountains, but you had a huge amount of flow coming out on the alluvial
front. Yeah.
So leaking out those channels.
The surface water really itself just went down.
And then, and then also with all the summer rain, the wells were off. Quite a bit.
And the wells were off. And right. Often, when you look at groundwater withdrawal graphs throughout the state, and without knowing what was happening as far as precip, if I just present you this graph, you kind of scratch your head on going, well, you know, how come the water, you know, how come the withdrawals are going, you know, down in these years? Well, they're wet years. Just like, you know, nobody wants to turn on their pump and, you know, burn up electricity if all of a sudden it's falling out of the sky.
The idea.
We have to move back east for that.
You know, it was not uncommon in several wells I looked at during those 83, 84, 85 years to see jumps of 70 to 80 feet in well levels just popping. A lot of that was just through the alluvial.
Yeah.
And it happened quick. I mean, it happened within a month sort of thing. Spring of the wells just jumped quickly. Some of it was sustained longer for a several month period, but it was a really quick response. But a longer term response that would come from the higher mountain water, she doesn't move it through. So it just depends on the system.
They did a feasibility study on the Keystone Pipeline bringing oil out of Alaska. Could we do a study on bringing water out of the Columbia River Basin to here?
You don't have to get behind Las Vegas for that one.
We could do that. It's not part of this study.
Will you be doing anything looking for evidence of ground subsidence?
That was originally part of the proposal and got dropped. So no. We would have liked to.
Are there aren't any obvious sites in Parowan Valley at this point, are there?
Yeah, there are.
Are there?
Talk to
Bill Lund?
Well, no. He lives just down the street from me. Why have I forgot his name? he has a well. He has a well out.
Spit it out.
Tony Orton.
Wait, what's that?
Tony Orton.
No, it's farther north. It's closer to Chimney Meadows area. Art Walness. He has a well out there that he has a pad poured around, and that pad now is sitting 2 feet off the ground.
Yeah, but that's
there's several wells in the valley that you can see that.
Yeah.
Is that that's not subsidence?
You don't put
enough
gravel in.
The ground, the pumping the wells, isn't it?
What's that?
That was the prairie dogs digging underneath.
Well, and then there's also Bill Lund did a study of some fractures out by the Little Salt Lake that also same thing as Cedar Valley. But it's there.
Well, that report that Bill Lund did for the Conservancy District has not been finalized, and there was the first go around. There was a bunch of errors in it, so I wouldn't hang my hat on that one. That fact that there were some serious datum issues with that report in the Cedar Valley, and they haven't finalized the second one yet. There's only been a preliminary report out for about 10 months to the Conservancy District.
Well, when you have 2 feet difference between,
you know, those things have been going on for 60 years. I can remember as a kid down in Cedar Valley irrigating some corn one time and the water was running down a hole, like it did the Gopher Hole. And that was about in 1938, 39. So it's nothing new. And I don't think it's because of the water tables down. That's before they drilled hardly any wells down in Cedar Valley. I don't think there was a, maybe one or two irrigation wells down by then. I think it was 34, 37 when they drilled the first one.
Yeah. That could also be seismic activity though, couldn't it?
Sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that it should be attributed to. It gets real suspicious when you get in areas though, when you show great drawdown areas and all of a sudden you got your surface starting to react and it kind of correlates those areas. So. Okay, do you have other questions? And for Tom. Okay.
Could you go back to the map of the whole valley?
Which one?
The aerial imagery where you have the contour lines.
Oh.
Right there. Yeah. Either one of those fine.
Yeah, we'll let Kirk talk to us a little bit about the policy here. Okay? Just,
that'll make it easier if I need to refer to something.
Yeah.
Okay. This won't take long because the policy is actually fairly simple for Parowan Valley. All waters of the basin are fully appropriated, both surface and groundwater, and have been for some time. The basin is divided into two. Is there a pointer on this?
The red button.
Red button. There's two sub-basins here. One divides it comes across about right here, separating the Buckhorn Flat area from the rest of the valley. I went through all our policy manuals trying to find out what was the basis of that line. That is a hard line that you can't cross with transfers one way or the other. I could not find anything that says why that boundary was placed there. From what I understand, or what I was always told, is that that there is a confining layer right here. Right in this area, there's a bunch of flowing wells.
Not anymore.
Well, on the Buckhorn side of the line, they are flowing. I've witnessed those. I don't know if you know John Upton.
Yeah.
His property, he's got some flowing wells that are still
right
flowing.
There at the rest area.
Right at the rest area.
Out there.
Yes. they are still flowing there. And when you look at the well logs, you can see very significant clay layers. I think that's why that boundary is there, is because there tends to be, it's not total separation, but there is a confining layer. I think that's why that was placed there. The wells in this area are very shallow and very productive. You won't find a more productive well in the southwest region than what you find on the Buckhorn. Mm-hmm. Don Roberts up in this area farms about 1,000 acres, and he has 500 acres down here by Paraguna. His pump costs for the Paraguna farm are more than his pump costs for Buckhorn. That tells you there's a significant difference there in the efficiency of those wells. That is the only policy boundary for the basin fill aquifer where you cannot cross. You can move water out here in the valley anywhere within this area and then up on the Buckhorn anywhere up there.
So that is the only boundary. Now, when the only other policy issues we deal with is we know all the surface flows are fully appropriated, and you have, let's see here, Summit Creek would be right here, Perwin Main Creek right here, you have Brian Head up here, and you know, development taking place up on the mountain. Historically, that development has used water rights originating from those surface rights. You know, part of Perwin Reservoir Company's rights or something that they purchased, surface rights that they've transferred up. The same with Summit Creek. A lot of the development on the Summit side here is using water that was purchased from Summit Irrigation Company. More recently, since 2005, there have been a few application approved moving groundwater from the valley up there with mitigation with the reservoir companies to make them whole for any water that's taking, but transferring that water up. That's kind of a new approach. There's been, I think, 3 applications total that have taken that approach. Two with Brian Head Properties, and then a more recent agreement with Brian Head Special Service District to do the same thing. But in both those, in all those cases, there's been mitigation to make those prior surface users whole. And that's the key to the policy of moving anything up or developing anything up on the mountain, is you can't impair the prior surface users there. Somehow you have to make them whole. And that policy would be the same on Red Creek, probably, you know, any, the time I've been here, I haven't seen any attempt to move any water up Red Creek. There have been some existing developments up there dealing with stock water and other existing rights up on the mountain. So that really is the policy for the basin in a nutshell. Just kind of looking here. This boundary between the Buckhorn Flat and the main valley here, the policy we have is the south boundary of Township 32 South. It is where that boundary has been set, that hard boundary. We haven't really dealt with any surface water to groundwater type, other than the Brian Head ones, that the prior ones that they've already years ago did. But that's basically it as far as policy.
Is there a hard boundary between like the Northern Cedar Valley and the Perwin Valley?
Yeah. However, there's one individual who drilled his well right on that hard boundary. And he has water from Cedar Valley and Perwin Valley put in the same well.
I don't think hard is the operative term there. There's a boundary there that was done.
Line on the map.
There's a line on the map, yeah.
It's based on surface topography because you really don't know what the water's doing down there.
Yes.
But there has been a line drawn.
Is the state going to consider that line there where Frank drilled that well, right on the line?
Well, that's where our boundary on our map, our administrator boundary, that's where it goes. That's why he selected there, because that was our line. Does it correspond to the groundwater one way or another? No.
I mean, it might, but it really corresponds with the surface drainage. One side drains to Wind Gap, the other side out to Little Salt Lake area. And that one individual is the only case where we...
And you don't see that? There's not a precedent there to be nervous about? Are there any other efforts to, in that area? There's not, is there right now?
There have been no other requests for anything of that nature. I think if somebody wanted to, I think we'd take probably have to take the same approach. You got to find water from both.
What about Sorensen's? That's on the Parowan side.
Sorensen's well.
Where the pivots are out there.
The Hewlett's area.
Jimmy Prince's old
Hewlett runs it, but it's Sorensen's.
So you're talking these two pivots right here. The well they pump from is on the other side of the interstate.
They pump from up in the canyon.
Yeah, up there. On the cedar side of the drainage, the actual drainage boundary goes this side. So that is actually on the cedar side of the drainage. So the well is on the cedar side of the drainage. Their use is on it. But the only different thing there is they do use Summit Creek water on those same pivots. So you actually have Parowan water being taken to the Cedar Valley side. But that was done years ago. Part of
see, all those factors will have to be taken into account when they do the budget recharge. All those.
Yeah. When you look at that, I guess that is the only area where you have water
going both ways.
Are we going to get enough information to define that line a little better, or I don't know if that will help us between the two.
I think you'd have to look underneath the ground to figure that out.
Well, if there's a 200-foot elevation differential there, and if you assume that slope is continuous, then there's really no way to draw that line. It's going to have to be an administrative decision rather than a technical decision.
And you will always be questioned on... I think drawing our line based on the surface topography is probably the best we can do there, the way I look at it.
And I think we've tried to do the best we can, because we certainly don't want all of the groundwater rights in Cedar Valley moving up into Parowan Valley. We don't want to do that, because that's really going to impact Parowan Valley, and the same thing going the other way. Because there's just not that much impact between them right now because of the distance. We want to, it seemed to be a good place to separate it. But exactly where that state goes on the line is...
Now the one thing that might be permissible there, which we've done in other areas, is say they purchase Parowan water rights here and drill a well on the Parowan side, but they want to use it on the Cedar side. We could limit them to their annual depletion, allowing them just to take what historically was lost to the system anyway.
We've done that haircut of 50% or whatever.
It would be something like that.
Yeah, right up front, they lose
40%. Because it would be just the depletion.
We've done that in some other areas.
And the reason for that, because we want the return flows or any recharge to stay in the valley that it's in.
So there, basically what the effect there is no net loss to the valley. Okay. I'm supposed to take 45 minutes.
45? Yeah, you still got to take. There you go. No, that's great. If you have any questions on what the policy is, I'm sure you understand these questions.
Yes. So as part of the study, in your recommendations, can you put a statement in the policy that the Parowan water, valley water stays in Parowan Valley for the purpose of recharging and benefiting, keeping that aquifer up? Can you make that part of the policy?
I think that already is that, our policy.
I really do. I think that's what it is, and I think that's why we put that boundary in there, saying we don't want this water coming out of the valley. We want it to stay to benefit the users in this valley. Same over here in Cedar Valley.
But that scenario I said, where somebody could buy water in Parowan Valley and pump just the depletion over, that's a real possibility. You know, that farm that was auctioned off last year, Cedar City Corporation was at one point interested in that. So, if they did that, that it would be with those conditions.
Okay. Other questions on that?
Amen.
Okay.
Thanks, Kurt.
Dan, thank you too for the information that you presented. Are there any questions then about what you've heard tonight, or where we're going, or what we're trying to accomplish here?
Anybody want to buy a farm in Earthshape?
Yeah.
I just have one more question. The well drillers told me that at about 1,000 feet below the surface, there's and these are guys have been doing a lot of drilling in our area. Said that there's a strata of clay strata that's holding pressure water deeper, that's holding it down, that it's under pressure, that if you punch through that clay strata, it would bring the water table up in the stratas above. Has there been any study regarding that? Does anybody know anything about that, or is that just another one of those stories?
I think all that water down there belongs to Las Vegas.
Well, see, that's another thing. They can claim that. No, that's what they claim as a different aquifer. They can claim that water as a different source.
Yeah, I don't know if there have been studies. I'm just not familiar with that. I don't know. I mean, if there's a way to do that and to get that water to come up.
I mean, we could never afford to pump 1,000 feet down and right. Farm with, but there is...
There's been some wells.
Maybe they were just trying to get me to go deeper with my well.
how much per foot is he going to charge you to go down and find
that? You drilled one that deep, didn't you, Sam?
You know, when they drill that oil,
yeah,
they had more trouble with water than they
did. Our new one, Kurt,
did they?
Just that very well.
Yeah, but it's up on the mountain.
So that
but
means
if water come up from one aquifer into another aquifer. So when we pump one well out of the first aquifer and pump the second well that was deeper, we never lost water in the first aquifer. We always maintained.
And I have that same experience, and so that means there's another water source down there that we're not taking into account.
It's pressurized.
Keep in mind, you're like I say, you're up on the mountain where you have a more defined separation between
tunes of staff.
Typically, the valley fill is.
But see, and the evidence that I have is I had a well collapse, and so I drilled a new one close in proximity to the one that collapsed. While they were drilling that well, I was still pumping the old one, and my volume came up after they reached a certain level depth with the new well. With the old well, it started pumping more.
You actually physically saw more water becoming available to the old well.
And I think because it punched through maybe that clay strata and accessed a different aquifer. And see, we don't really know where the water is under there specifically. And where the source is. I mean, we assume it's coming off the mountains, but maybe not all of it.
Did we have any data from that oil well that was out up on the peak there by the gap a couple of years ago?
I haven't seen anything.
Same story. The rumor was they punched through a place and water.
They had more problem with water than they did the drilling.
Source of water, but it's pretty, it's kept guarded secret or something.
I visited that well and read the notes on it. Yeah. That well is like 2,000
feet. It was feet way deep. It was up on
and
the
it
peak,
was,
by the
it gap. Was backfilled and sealed, I believe, to a depth of 500 feet. It's concreted in because they did have issues with water in it. And the static water level after it was sealed, I believe, was around 275.
And that was way up on top.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So where's that water coming from?
That is potentially a deeper carbonate system. Wow. It was thermal water.
Oh,
it was quite hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things, as you begin thinking about these deeper levels, in many of the basin fill aquifers from our experience, throughout Utah, in the basin fill aquifers, there's a great example from up in the Delta area, is that as you drill deeper, once you go through a certain depth, your water quality gets a drop off.
Right.
Considerably. And so, there might be a confining layer down there where you actually have some pressurization, but you also have the danger of, all of a sudden you're getting, could get some fairly saline water
you know, moving up if you've actually developed some kind of connection in here. So I have no idea if that might be the case here, even if those conditions exist, but it's quite common in a lot of these alluvial aquifers in the Great Basin that you have, you know, your water quality degrades as you go down below a certain depth. That can be an issue.
Well, then could the reverse also be, there was the Roberts farm out there near Little Creek. When they first started farming that back in years and years ago, they got a real high sodium content in the water. Since the water table dropped, it's cleared up. Is that, I mean, what was going on there?
High sodium.
High sodium?
Salt, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you could have some more shallow. I mean, sometimes, and again, I don't know, I have no idea where the location of this is and how close it may be to older playa deposits. And you may have had some, you know, saline, mineral sitting in there, and then as you drop, you actually
that farm is just upstream of an old spring area there that Lyle Barton, that property he owns, that was a spring area where you did have water historically years ago.
And in some of these discharge areas where it's somewhat similar to Playa, where you've got groundwater discharge coming out and a lot of evaporation where you get salts building up in those areas, and you drop the water level below that area, those salts remain in the upper surface, and then things could
That's exactly what I was trying to describe.
Okay, no more. Okay, well, thank you. Write them down. We're happy to answer what we can. But we did want to let you know that we are going to be out here gathering data. Tom will be here. I don't know if other people are going to be with you to gather information. So we'll have people out here gathering data, putting information together through this year. Again, the report then will be compiled next year, putting it together, getting models ready. And in 2015, we will have that report ready, done, and come back, and we will meet and talk to you about that. And if you have questions about anything or what's going on, certainly contact our regional office. Or
my cards are up there.
Or cards are right here to contact Tom. You can ask him questions about what's going on, or if there's things that you think we ought to be looking at. Now, we certainly have a scope of work that we're looking at. Like Tom mentioned, we were going to do some things, and some things were cut out. We do not have unlimited supplies of funds, and we had to decide to do what we need to do. And if we keep getting sequestered somehow, we might have less funds to do things. We hope we're okay, and that's the plan. We've got things set up to go ahead and do what we need to do. So we think this is going to give us great information, and thank you so much for being here. You're welcome to stay after and ask questions or whatever you'd like to, but thank you very much for being here. So
my only consolation is if presidential policies stay in place, there'll be plenty of government jobs for farmers that don't have water.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. Okay, thank you all very much.